Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about pyroelectric materials. Yep, they're materials that charge up or create an electric field when you change their temperature. And we'll just try and get you into the ideas of the different types of electrical materials there are. These pyroelectric materials are significant, I think, in that they create the electric fields for a little tabletop nuclear fusion generator which generates neutrons. So you can have a little desktop, basically chip almost, that produces neutrons. To try and get that into your mind, that's something that I'm slowly getting used to some of the technology that's around here, and behind the technology is some pretty marvellous ideas. So we're living in an age of lasers, writable CDs, 3D cross-point memories, all these new memory systems, and there's a material which is called pyroelectric, and so I'm just going to try and give an overview of the different types of phenomena. Now, going through my podcasts, I've talked about the... I suppose I started off with the idea of a dye which is switchable by pH, which is, we know is an indicator. And then if you look at it, you have something which is switchable. It's got a memory of its resistance, its electric field, its resistivity can change, and that's chalcogenate. I'm going to have to see if I can pronounce that. It's one of these things where you only read things and you don't speak. Chalcogenide glasses. These are silicons, except the oxygens are replaced with sulfur, tellurium, selenium, those types of things. I think plutonium is further up in the chalcogenides. They're the group 6 or 16. They're the underneath the oxygen. So instead of oxygen, you've got those glasses, and that's very interesting. These glasses are not as glassy as glass, so they can, with a bit of temperature, be coaxed between the crystalline and the glass state arrangement. It's something I find really hard to try and get my mind around, actually, the physics of what's going in there. But these are pretty fantastical stuff, and there's the stuff of these fantastic memories, I think, produced by... I suppose it would be Intel producing these memories here. So I'm just going through the path of things that I've been talking about. Then I've got into magnetic materials and taking you through the journey of diamagnetic, paramagnetic, the different ferromagnetic, anti-ferromagnetic, and ferrimagnetic, all to do with those last three. There's a sort of a social relationship between the local magnetic field. So a ferromagnetic, the actual magnetic field influences it. So it's all pretty... so a ferromagnet can be have domains and have a... I'm breathing a little bit hard because I'm going on my cardiac walk around in circles around at the moment. Okay, so... So those are social effects. So let's just get you an idea of... We've walked through chemicals, glasses. So just in terms of the actual structure, the chalcogenate glasses can have a resistive memory and can be used for memory there. So their resistivity changes with electric field. So that's a really important thing to get your mind about. And then all those magnetic properties. And I suppose people are very familiar with domains and stuff like that. I suppose what I'm interested in is the spin valve. The fact that you can get a metamaterial and add ferromagnetic and anti-ferromagnetic materials in a sandwich and make something which has a resistivity sensitive to magnetic fields. It's pretty mind-blowing stuff. So that's the background of it. So if you haven't understood any of that, go back and listen to some of the podcasts to start looking around. So as there's a periodic table of elements with different properties, there's sort of, in my mind, a sort of almost a periodic table of physical properties that you can look at to go across. And in fact, you can see the sort of the germ of this in the application that I've put up, an app, which is sort of a periodic table of properties. And if you can imagine, I'm looking at the electrical properties, and while I'm looking at the electrical properties, because there's some pretty interesting things. I think most people know the piezo effect, piezo effect, that is where you have a crystal and you put a strain on it, a strain along its charge axis, and it creates a high voltage or high electric field which goes along wires and creates a spark to light your Barbie or to light your stove or I suppose there's other things, the piezoelectric crystals. So you put the piezoelectric crystals, it creates a high voltage, mechanical into voltage. But piezoelectric crystals is just one of a group of things. Now your pyroelectric crystals create a voltage on change of temperature. And this is a rather convenient thing, because if you've got something, you can change the temperature of it. And so essentially what happens is that as the temperature increases, just quite simply, the positive charges move or align away from the negative charges, and a molecular dipole is created. A fairly powerful molecular dipole is created with elevated temperature, and a field is generated, and this is a temperature dependent effect. And so you can get one of these devices or this material. So it's pyroelectric. I'm still to really have a look at the crystal structure. So it's all in the crystal structure, how the positive and the negatives are arranged, and the actual relative bond lengths, expansion rate. Right, so if you imagine they expand, if it wants to expand, it does so by expanding, by increasing the individual little dipoles. So this particular effect means that you can get one of these crystals, heat it up and cool it down, cool it down and heat it up, and generate a very high electric field, which means that you can create a high electric field basically on a chip or something very small, and use that electric field to drive fusion and have a little tabletop fusion thing. So that's mind-blowing. Now, going back to the pyroelectric effect, all these effects, when you look at it, magnetism and a few other effects, have ancient origins, and you have to be really careful when you're looking at ancient origins, because there is effect, and if there's enough written about it, you can generally find someone who's observed an ancient effect and has written something which is suspiciously close to it. But you've got to really look into it and actually scratch your head. So there's a few cases that I've read literature, people have said, it's an ancient thing, but when you really look into it, that ancient person really didn't understand it, or they couldn't have really observed the effect to make the set of conclusions correct. So they got the right answer, say, in the exam, but all the working's completely screwy. So there's been a few cases where someone's got the correct answer, they get a mark for that, but nothing else, because they've got through it a completely incorrect method of thinking. But in the case of pyroelectric, so let's go through the, we're in the electricity part of the periodic table of phenomena, under the electric materials with electric field. We've done materials magnetic field, materials with, I suppose, electrical properties other than semiconductors, which is Kolchogen. I can't even pronounce it. I'm not going to even bother pronouncing it. We're doing the electric materials, and in the electric materials, we've got the piezoelectric effect, the pyroelectric effect, and the ferroelectric effect. So, and these are all fascinating things that you can get your teeth into to try and think of the amount of devices that you could actually produce with a, basically a periodic table of phenomena to work through. It is, would be phenomenal. It's like people nowadays when they're looking at chemistry and they found the chemistry of one thing. Well, what would happen if I replaced this element with that element? Elements vertically down the periodic table. So it's a little bit of a more complex things. And ferroelectric. Now, pyroelectric effects were seen in ancient times where someone saw that reported, I think, in 360 BC or thereabouts. I can't remember the name of the person. Reported that sawdust, which was attracted to this crystal, this particular crystal, which I'm going to look up. I'll be really interested to see whether it's at all glassy, you could draw it or embed it or grow it. It's something which just would really fascinate me. And so this crystal attracted sawdust when it was hot, but when it cooled down, the sawdust dropped off on it, i.e. when it was hot, it created an electric field. We could imagine at that increased temperature that the electric field would mean that a charge would flow around it until it equilibrated off. So when you freshly heated something, it attracted sawdust. Now, sawdust is not charged, but it is polarizable. So if there's a negative charge, the negative charge on the sawdust, the field on the sawdust will cause the negative charges to move away, and so the next will have a repulsive pressure on the electrons, and if there's a large number of electrons being presented to a piece of sawdust, the electrons will move away and move away, and leaving, exposing the positive charge. Now, that would mean the positive charge and negative charge would have no dead effect, but the electric field drops off, so you've got to have a field gradient necessary for this type of thing to work, and then the so there's a dipole effect, would cause tidal effect in the piece of sawdust, i.e. the sawdust would try and stretch a bit, with the negative charges pulling away, and the positive charges pulling in the other direction, so it would be a tidal effect in it. But the electric field gradient is such that it would actually pull the positive charge, would feel a stronger electric field than the negative charge, which is pushed around, and there'd be a net movement within the dipole. This is important to understand for in electrostatics, that it's the creation of a dipole and electric field gradient which creates the motion of a dipole. So just to get it straight into you, and you sort of know this when you do modeling and stuff like that, that charges, individual ions will they flow in fields, but the actual dipoles flow in field gradients. And so if you can actually create a strong localized field gradient by having positive and negative charges, you'll get a big strong pickup of dipoles. And so what would have happened here is that this crystal would have had a field gradient, so which could really have meant that it's not necessarily a set crystal. The crystal could have been multifaceted, but when it's close together, the actual crystal faces of individual regions, which are aligned correctly, would produce this electric field. But synthetically, I can get one of these crystals heated up, say with a bit of nichrome wire, and create a massive electric field. So I'll have to really look into the technology there. But what I want to cover here after this is the something called ferroelectrics. Now, the ferro in ferromagnetic was initially associated. Ferro means iron, the ferrite means ferroelectric, means that it was ferrites. So that referred to the minerals it was seen, and then the actual property was associated with the mineral. So ferro refers to cooperative social domains. That is the spin orientation at one point affects its neighbours, so you get domains growing. And so similarly in ferroelectric devices, rather than being pressure or temperature, it's electric field. And this has got these fantastic properties. So you can put a crystal in an electric field and it will reinforce and remember that electric field. So it's electric memory, and is electric field memory. So ferroelectric devices or crystals record the actual electric field. And similar to ferromagnetic cores, it's got a hysteresis and a memory process. So there are these computer chips, which are sort of as fast as the leaky variety. So there's, I think it's dynamic random access memory, and so it's dynamic because it requires a continual charge and rewriting of the memory, something like 20 times a second. That's to rewrite the memory to itself, or the charge just leaks away. This stores the charge when it's flipped. There's technological problems limiting the deployment of it. It's quite a competitive thing, but it's quite an amazing thing that you can get this material, and you can actually write an electric field in it, and then take it away, so you can actually have a device which applies an electric field, and I can imagine it being quite small, and you can then use it as a way of storing an electric field, which is quite important. So let's have a recap on it, and I'll try later on to tell you about the actual structure. So moving back, so the most recent thing I'll recall you, then I'll do a broader recall, and then a big broader recall. So the most recent thing that I've got you to think about is the types of electric materials, which are piezoelectric, pyroelectric. So all pyroelectric materials are also by definition piezoelectric, but just remember that. And then you've got the ferroelectric materials, which respond not to pressure, not to temperature, but to the electric field. And therefore, because it's got the same response as what generates it, it can be self-locking. So it locks into domains. That's electric materials. And then broadening out again, we've got the analogy, but through a slightly different mechanism. So this is the electric materials is the dipoles stored in the crystal structure, but going out again to magnetic materials, we've got the actual properties of the fundamental particles having magnetic fields and how those fundamental particles interact with each other, and that generates you a zoo of magnetic properties, which gives you such things, fantastic things as magnets, which you have today, the spin valves, spin glasses, and and the garnets, which are very magnetic things. So there's all those, these fantastic phenomena, which are really driving our civilization. So I think we've really passed through a renaissance of the magnetic materials. We've got the spin valve in our drives, and the very electric ones, the very electric garnets, creating a non-reciprocal mirrors. So the light goes in, hits a mirror, and then goes out a different optical fiber, which has really created the complexity of our internet. So we really recently have built our modern technology on the properties of magnetic materials. Then you expand it further out to the properties of other crystal properties, the chalcogenate glasses and the electroresistive qualities of those. Then you can expand it further out to semiconductors. And so if you can actually imagine a series, a periodic table of phenomena, which I'll write. But each of those, it's not as easy as a trend or things are located. Each of those delve into another areas of physics. It's semiconductors, it's the actual, single electrons in a bulk of crystal. Then you've got essentially crystalline structures and how they interact. So semiconductors are at one extreme, where the electrons are the way they are. They cannot be conductive, or they're balanced. Basically, electrons are electrons, but their conduction properties are balanced. So it's a semiconductor. So the different aspects of the way electrons behave, and essentially there's different, really almost confusing different properties of matter and solid state physics to consider in all of this. And dare I say, there's just a real dearth of education in this area. So I think what we do is we teach our kids, really basically, I think they'd be struggling to know things even at the most basic level. They probably wouldn't know how their telluride coating on writable CDs. They wouldn't probably know about that, or they wouldn't really understand. What they probably do is have sort of panning across between the detailed knowledge, which we want to get to, that periodic table, and what we teach nowadays. We teach something that's either magnetic or non-magnetic, or it's a semiconductor, and start to go through that. So that's just another quick podcast, and I'll try to talk a little bit more. I've got a bit more in my cardiac walk that I'm doing here. I'm actually doing quite well at the moment. Thanks a lot for listening. Thank you. podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.